Thanks, Shane. Brendan Courtney here.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, indeed. Brendan Courtney here. It's Thursday. Happy Thursday. How you doing? Remember, it used to be Top of the Pops Day on a Thursday. Maybe wash my hair. Anyway, I'm here today and tomorrow. I've had a lovely week. Thanks very much. Now, tonight I'm off to a very important gala launch. Tonight is the launch of the Gaze Film Festival. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E, Film Festival. It is a pun because the Gaze International LGBTQIA Film Festival 2023 runs from the 3rd to the 7th of August in Dublin in the IFI, the Lighthouse and Stella Cinemas. I really wanted to mention this because in our lovely little world here in Ireland, we've done a lot of really good things in the last few years. It's still illegal to be gay in over 60 countries around the world, and with rights being rolled back in lots of different places around the world, these festivals are very, very important. The Gaze Film Festival returns to its original summer date, and as I said, it's running over this August Bank Holiday weekend, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be a great weekend for going to the cinema. You enjoy your festivals. I'm going to the cinema. Make sure you bring your wellies. Interestingly and notably, the organisers have taken the plus, you know, LGBTQ plus, right? They've taken that out of the shadows and they're adding the INA. Now, I get a little confused by this as well, and I'm one of them. I'm one of those number, those letters. LGBTQIA is the festival's full title for the first time. It's also with a nod to the fact that it's the 30th anniversary of the decriminalisation of homosexuality in Ireland. Go us, we're brilliant. And the programme features 114 films from 25 countries. More information at www.gaze.ie. I'm going to explain the LGBTQIA as best I can, because it does get a little confusing. So it was LGBTQ plus, and the plus was kind of a catch-all, and the IA have been added for it. I had to text a friend, actually. I had to text Rory O'Neill, you know, Panty. I said, Rory, what's the I and the A? Rory said, intersex and asexual. I'm going to ask you to Google them, because I'm not going to explain them live on air during the day, but have a look at what they are, and they're very important because they're very inclusive. Now, also, I'm a judge, which I'm really happy to do. I think it's a registered charity, so I'm going to give up my time for the weekend, and I'm kind of happy that it's going to be a bit overcast. I'm judging Best Documentary, Best Irish Short and Best International Short. And very unnervingly, the organisers have just very recently informed me that I feature in one of the documentaries that's being rerun. It's called The George. As you can imagine, if you know anything about Dublin and the gay scene, The George is Ireland's most famous gay bar. It's called The George, so it's obviously in and around the bar. And it was made in 2002, when I was a considerably more fun. And I'm in it, Panty, who you will know, of course, from Panty Bar, but also Rory O'Neill did Dancing with the Stars this year. Panty's in it, Sherry Temple Bar, a.k.a. Declan Buckley, who does Telly Bingo, he's in it, and Veda, and we're on a WhatsApp group. And here's the thing, this documentary was made in 2002, called The George, it's screening on Saturday. None of us remember a jot of it. None of us have any idea what's in it. We haven't a clue what's going on. So we've actually said bravely, let's just go and watch it together and see what's on it. I mean, it's 21 years ago, is it, right? 2002? So I would have been 15, joking. We haven't got a clue. It's made by filmmaker Clark Harding. Never heard of him. But he's going to be joining us for a Q&A afterwards. I haven't a clue what to expect. I'm going to bring my Aunt Colette. Now, contain yourselves. My gorgeous Aunt Colette, I think she's listening. Hi, Colette. Tickets are sorted. Pop around to mine, 5 o'clock Saturday. And her partner, Ellen, is going to come. Yes, yes. For thoroughly modern family. But I'm hoping it's not too wild. I don't want to shock my poor aunt. So I will report back as to what is in that documentary. And I'm nervous and excited. Now, I also see the Galway races are well underway. And one thing they're known for is the style that comes along with them. It is Ladies' Day today. So best of luck, and I hope the rain held off for you all. But judging by RTE journalist Teresa Mannions, love Teresa, a tweet she put out yesterday, one woman has already given up and thrown her shoes in the bin. On closer inspection, the pink Manola Blahniks cost about €700 are in the bin. Teresa posted a picture of the discarded heels, saying, security staff at Ballybrit were bemused to find a pair of designer shoes worth €660 dumped in the bin. Even a pair of Manola Blahniks couldn't sustain a lady at the Galway races. And the pictures of literally cast in a garbage bin, these beautiful, I would say they're kind of a nude pink, but you can also see they've been worn. There's a big clump of mud and grass wrapped around the heel. So this woman was like, ah, to hell with this. She just whipped them off and threw them in. So ladies, I would say, if you're going along to the races and you know it's going to be a bit wet, maybe consider a block heel. Just, you know, just put my other hat on there. Or even maybe bring a second pair of shoes. But if you're the Manona Blahnik woman from the Galway races, drop us a little text, 51551. We won't name and shame you, but we might try and reunite you with your Manonas. You may have heard of the Rose of Tralee. Catherine Thomas is stepping in with Doughty, all very exciting. Well, recently, as in today, it's come to my attention that there exists a pet beauty pageant. Can you imagine my excitement? A pet beauty competition, shall we say. Guess what it's called? It's called the Nose of Tralee. A clever publicity initiative by a website called PetSittersIreland.com. I guess the clue is in the name, PetSittersIreland.com. And a quick look at their website. All the county noses have been selected. The Dublin nose is Johnny a Cat. Okay, well, cats can feature too. It's too late to enter this year. Voting is open for the county representatives, but until the 21st of August. And then you'll be able to submit your picture to enter your pet in the Nose of Tralee 2024. I am definitely going to enter Nancy Drew in Nose of Tralee. And there's a competition going on upstairs in the office about who might win that. There's a Basset Hound up there we were looking at, very cute. There's a cat that looks like it's wearing eyeliner. There's a good couple of entries there. But obviously, per capita, it'll probably be a higher competition rate from Dublin, Cork, all with the bigger cities. So just to get your noses in there early if you want to be in with a chance to win the Nose of Tralee. I love it. It's so cute. Speaking of dogs, I got a lovely email from a fellow dog lover. Hi, Michelle. Hiya. Brendan, she wrote. Great. Oh, well, she didn't write. Somebody wrote it on her behalf. Great to hear you on the airwaves. Thanks very much. My mother, Michelle, is a huge fan of yours, and I love you, Michelle. She was listening to me talk about my dog, Nancy Drew, and how she likes to have her collar, it's actually a bra, taken off for a while in the evening and then coming back to have it put back on. She does. She's very protective of her harness, basically. Well, my dog, Cordy, does the exact same. However, my mother wanted to show off her grandchild's talent. Now she's talking about the furry grandchild, Cordy. Cordy has been trained not to get up on the sofa without her blanket. My heart melts. On a command, she will go over to the corner of the room where the blanket is kept. Oh, I'm trying not to cry. She'll pick it up with her mouth, bring it over to the sofa and start to put it on the sofa where, before she finally gets to sit up on the sofa, she sent me a video of Cordy, this beautiful little doggy, goes over to the corner, gets his blanket and brings it over and puts it up so that she doesn't dirty the sofa. Oh my God, my mother is very keen for me to see it. Your mother, and I've seen it, Chris, thank you very, very much. She's very, very proud of her furry grandchild. Chris, you've made my day and thank you for making the effort to record that video. I absolutely love it. Now, feel like a little bop in the kitchen? Put your tea down, calm down. You won't be able to stop yourself. Laura Branigan, Gloria, go for it. Could you keep yourself still to that song? Were you up? Were you dancing around? I was. It wasn't pretty. Some lovely texts in. Hi, Brendan, our 15-year-old terrier mix, Flossie, gets what we like to call, in inverted commas, collar off time. She loves it. Very nice. And then Orlean Kilmainham said, Brendan, you're in a documentary. What's next for you? Hollywood. Enjoy yourself. Thanks, Orla. Yeah, Brendan Gosling. I see it now. Okay, so after 4 o'clock, we're looking for two people to come on and play our quiz. You will answer three whodunit questions each on music, sport, television, politics, books, films, comedians. Like all whodunits, there will be clues. If you answer without a clue, you get 2 points. If you opt for a clue, it is a bit easier. You only get 1 point. And we have a prize for the winner. This week, we've teamed up with the I Knew A Collection's Dublin One Hotel to give one lucky listener the chance to win a two-night mini break in the city. Breakfast each morning and dinner on one of the evenings in their vibrant botanical restaurant. Dublin One Hotel is a stylish, central, good value base located on the North Circular Road in Dublin for exploring all the city has to offer. It'd be close to the main shopping areas, entertainment venues, and even near where I live. Look at you. They're suggesting we check out their summer offers at dublinonehotel.com. As I said, we need two people to come and join us for the quiz. So, we have a qualifying question. All you've got to do is answer this question. Tickets for an 11-show run at Vicar Street by which much-loved Irish singer went on sale this morning? Is it Christy Moore or Christy Less? Call us on 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925 with that answer to be in with a chance to join us to play the quiz. It's super fun. After the break, Foster and Alan are going to be honoured at the FLA this week and they're going to join us to tell us all about it.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, some lovely news just in this afternoon. Foster and Allen are set to be honoured at the Fla Ceoil na hÉireann 2023. The duo will receive a special recognition award, the Gradam na Héisce, from Ceoiltis Ceoiltóirí Éireann. Well, Tony Allen and Mick Foster are on the line. Congratulations, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
Ah, isn't that great news? It's absolutely, but just to give a context.
You live long enough, you get all these things.
I knew you were going to say that. No, but seriously, it's the award is to honour the long-time commitment to Irish culture and heritage. And the last year's recipients were former President Mary McAleese and former Taoiseach Brian Cowan. This is a big deal, lads.
We're in very good company, you know.
You are indeed. Were you surprised when you heard?
And, of course, I only live outside Mullingar, you know, so
yes.
I nearly could come in on a bike.
And will you come in on a bike to collect your award and cycle home with it in the basket?
I don't think so. I think we have to be dressed very respectable. So I'd be afraid I'd get oil off my bicycle chain on the white suit.
Yeah, are you going to wear a white suit? How Johnny Logan have you? Loving it.
Joe Dolan had the white suit before anyone else, you know.
Oh, how dare I? You're absolutely right.
Yeah, correct.
How dare
I? Didn't like to say that, you know.
I'm glad you did.
I taught it.
I stand corrected. So, Tony, how's life anyway? How's everything going? Because we've actually...
Very good.
We filmed an episode...
Where you've gone.
Yeah. We filmed over the last few months. We were doing an episode of Keys to My Life with you, and it was wonderful. So I know you intimately now, Tony, don't I?
You're a big hiss and mort, let me tell you.
Ah, stop it. So how's it going to work? So on Thursday, you both go into... It's in the Cathedral of Christ and the King of Mullingar, and it's at 2:30 on Thursday, and you get presented with the award.
Yeah, I don't know how. I suppose they'll tell us what to do when the time comes, you know. We'll be there. We'll be there anyway, and we'll leave it up to them to work out. I think we have to sing Grace as well. And, of course, the two boys...
That wrote are also winning.
They wrote the song.
Yeah, so it's a special recognition for all of your contributions to Irish culture and heritage, but specifically through the song Grace, which was written by Sean O'Mara and Frank O'Mara. I was the guys upstairs did a bit of research. I was going to say I did research, but that would be a complete lie. But I was fascinated. Do you know what Grace is about? I bet you do. Do you, Tony?
Well, yeah. Well, it's about the marriage of Chris Clifford to...
Joseph Plunkett.
Joseph Mary, of course, yeah.
But it's...
Oh, it's a love song, really, which is nice. You know, it is a great love song. It just happens to be political, I suppose, as well.
I didn't realise it was written in 1985, and it's about Grace Gifford, who married Joseph Plunkett in the chapel in Kilmainham Jail just hours before he was executed in 1916. How romantic. I know the song inside intimately, and I never knew that's what it was about. And it's that the song, the two guys who wrote that are getting a special recognition as well, which is lovely. Does it mean a lot to you guys to be recognised at this stage?
Sure, look at it. It's great. We're heading close for 50 years as far as Don Allen. We're 48 and a bit into it. And, you know, at this stage, we just say the only awards we can really get is still being alive awards. But it's great, and especially to be honoured in our own area as well,
which means
an awful lot. You know, the fact that we've been involved with that type of music all our lives, I mean, what Tony myself does now wouldn't be, you know, termed as traditional, but both of us started with traditional music, and I mean, I still do.
Yeah.
I'm on my way home from a traditional session in the Borden Inn in Clare.
Good man.
And well, we had a great night, met musicians that I knew and ones I didn't know, and get myself geared up for the Fla on Sunday.
So, wow, nearly 5 decades you're at it. What will you do for the big 50th anniversary? Will you do something amazing?
I will leave that to Tony.
You're very humble, I have to say. You are very humble. I mean, you have a big place in Irish hearts and around the world. I was very impressed. Tony, when we were filming, I actually couldn't believe you were on Top of the Pops. Remember you showed me that video of you two years on Top of the Pops?
Yeah, 1982, yeah.
You were on Top of the Pops. I mean, I'm obsessed with Top of the Pops, obviously, for my generation. So I was very impressed with all that. So the Fla is a remarkable success in Mullingar, isn't it, Mick?
Yeah, the Fla, I mean, the last time the Fla was in Mullingar was in 1963. And back then, the All-Ireland Flag Joes were always on a Whit weekend. So it was the 1st, 2nd and 3rd of June.
Wow.
But it was really just the weekend. Now it's a week long, so it's gone into a festival. It has, you know, it has spread its wings a lot more than when I started going to Flag Joes first back in 1962. I think it was the first Flag Joe I was ever at. And it kept, you know, progressing, you know, matter of opinion, whether it was for the good or the bad. But it is now more of a festival.
Yeah. And Tony, I'm going to, do you, I know that you, again, you're modest and you're very happy to be working. And do you look back and reflect now at times like this? Does it make you think, wow, we really did quite...
Of course, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had almost 50 years, you know, as I said to you before, it's a long time to be in the same job, but it's a long time to want to be in, you know. I mean, at no stage did either of us ever want to pack it up or stop playing, but it is a great life to look back. And it's all, I mean, when we look at the FLA now, like in getting the award, that's really, we appreciate that, because it's great that we did last that long and that we have done something for the business in some shape or form, you know, which everybody, I think, in the business wants to leave something behind, you know. And it is great that we've had hit records.
Brilliant.
We've had crowds of people and stuff like that. And it's also, of course, great that they're actually recognising that. And that's very, very important for me anyway.
And Mick, you're a Mullingar man, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bit of everything. I was born in Kildare and I was there for 12 years. I moved to Rathconnell, which is outside Mullingar, 63 years ago. So if you do your sums, you'll know exactly what I am.
I'm going to do something really Irish. You know Frank Shaw, do you? Well, his son Alex is a really good friend of mine. He's coming home from London for the FLA, and he said there isn't even an empty sofa to be had. It's going
to
be a huge success.
No, that's for certain. We have people staying in the house. We only live 4 miles outside Mullingar.
Right.
And we have people staying, and, you know, we had them last year as well. And they're booked in again. And you know, they're unfortunately, they're all friends, so there's no money. But every bed and breakfast, and as you say, sofa, everything is gone.
Yeah.
And we have a poly tunnel. Well, Myra has the poly tunnel.
Somebody be sleeping in it.
We could even sleep in that, you know. So
They'll cook. You've toured extensively, and obviously your fans will know that. But around the world, I mean, you've gone to Australia over 20 times.
Yeah,
we did 20 trips around Australia, which was amazing. It was wonderful when we were at it, but we wouldn't want to go back again. It was just too far away and all that. But we had huge success. I mean, we had number one record in New Zealand and Australia. Maggie was number one for 5 weeks out there in the pop charts. So we have a lot of great friends and fans out in both Australia and New Zealand.
Amazing. Well, I'm just going to note here that Marty Morrissey is live from the FLA on Monday morning bank holiday, and Louise Duffy will be there later on in the week broadcasting from Mullingar Town Centre on Thursday and Friday. So hopefully she'll catch the presentation of your award. I'd like to think that she might. But listen, you're still at it. Yeah. Grace is the song that's kind of been acknowledged and used as the vehicle to acknowledge you guys and the songwriters. And you recently recorded it on your recent album, We'll Meet Again.
We did. We recorded on our last album, which was... We'll Meet Again. Yeah, that came out last Christmas, and we had done that. And we were doing it at the shows, and it was, well, of course, it's on. And I tell my mother, where anyone sings that, it goes down the storm, you know. So it's an absolute. But the boys wrote some wonderful stuff.
So I've got to put you on the spot here, Tony. This album is which, what number? How many albums have you done?
Oh, God, only knows. About, I'd say, 60 or 70.
Wow.
I'm not too sure. I know it's almost 1,000 songs I've recorded over the 50 years. So.
Wow. So a very well-deserved award.
We're still at it.
You're still at it. Hi, I remember Mike Foster cycling home from school, the Convent of Mercy, Ballymahon, with the accordion on the back of his bike. Happy days, Kat said.
That's for certain. that was the only thing I learned in going to school was music.
Brilliant.
I hadn't no great interest in being an academic, so lucky enough, the music paid off.
It did.
Otherwise,
indeed.
I'd be under fierce pressure.
It totally worked out for you guys. Congratulations on the Gradam. It's called the Gradam na Héisce, and it'll be awarded to you from Cultus Culturiere at the FLA next Thursday. I'm really happy for you. And you did record, Grace, for the latest album. So I'm going to play us out with a little bit of you guys singing. Thank you so much, and congratulations, guys.
Thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Some lovely texts in Al in Sligo. Brendan, you're a treat. Oh, thanks very much. Loving the choices of songs all week. We had a little kitchen disco every afternoon this week. Well, you're very welcome, Al, but I didn't pick the songs. Niamh, the producer, did. She's very talented and she's in control right now. So I'm just going to say she's talented. It was a good song though, wasn't it? Okay, and then Bill on a motorway in Dubai. People are listening to us in Dubai, guys. Hi, Brendan. Bopped along as I drove home from work. Not a pretty sight, same as here. Looked in the mirror and discovered a big queue of traffic behind me. Realised I'd taken my foot off the pedal and my car was moving at about 20 miles an hour on a motorway in Dubai. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks, Bill. Keep on listening. Thanks, Minnie. Now, we're still looking for people to take part in our whodunit quiz. All you've got to do is answer this question. Tickets for an 11-show run at Vicar Street by which much-loved Irish singer went on sale this morning? Is it, this is easy, guys, Christy Moore or Christy Less? All you got to do is call us on 0818 715925. That's 0818 715925 with the correct answer. And then you can join me after four and you could win the two-night stay in the Dublin One Hotel with B&B and dinner one night. It'll be absolutely fab. So do join us for the quiz. Now for something completely different. So camp. Everybody in the box is dancing like little sugar plum fairies. Now I'm buzzing with excitement about this next item. We've heard about urban beekeeping initiatives that have been keeping bee populations thriving. So we decided to send our intrepid reporter, Sinead Neilcon, to the Liberties to investigate. Sinead joins me now in studio, dressed in yellow and black. Sinead, did you dress as a bee on purpose?
Usually I'm dressed like Johnny Cash. I'm always in black. And this morning, for some reason, maybe subconsciously, I was thinking of the bees, but I grabbed the first top that I saw and it just happened to be yellow. And my nails are yellow as well.
You fit right. They probably thought you were the overlord queen.
Yeah, maybe they thought I was taking the mick.
So tell us about your morning.
I had a wonderful morning in Dublin 8,
lovely,
your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I lived there. I didn't even know this was there. Imagine, yeah, this is probably about 5 minutes from where I live.
Well, it's just on Watlin Street.
Yeah.
So there's a nice little haven, a green space.
Gorgeous.
And there are beehives in there. This is all as part of the B8 initiative. And I met the beekeeper who works for the B8 initiative. His name is Anthony Freeman O'Brien. And basically he told me all about the village and the city. That's what they call the Liberties. I wasn't aware of that. And about the bees that they have, not just in Dublin 8, not just in Watlin Street. They have hives there, but they have them all over the Dublin 8 area and further afield as well. And it's all about, I suppose, educating people. It's about employment as well. They employ people as beekeepers. And I let Anthony himself tell us exactly what the B8 Urban Beekeeping Initiative is.
Well, the B8 initiative started from the InnerCity Beekeeping Project and it grew from that. It was originally one hive, but we have now 54. So it's basically, it became forced as a way of creating new opportunities for people and different types of employment, because with the community centres, you sort of, at the start, it was only really one type of employment to get off of people's safe passes and stuff like that, which is not always an option for people. So it was just to give people options and mental health and green and climate change. All these, there's lots of different reasons. For me personally, it's mainly about mental health and giving people the opportunity to engage with stuff that you never would be, especially the kids from Oliver Bond, who I spend a lot of time with. So it's just to encourage people and to get them engaged with nature and show them there's a really profound connection you can have that can help you a lot with your mental health. And living inside the city where you're drowning in concrete, these sort of things are really important.
Anthony's slightly poetic, isn't he? Profound. Oh. And drowning in concrete, you know.
He's an artist as well.
Is he?
Yeah, a sculptor and a fine art.
You could really hear that in him, can't you?
Yeah, you can. And he's very passionate about what he does. I think that comes across in how he speaks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I live right beside Oliver Bowen Flats. And so he brings the kids from the flats around and shows them mm-hmm. how he keeps the bees. This is amazing. I've lived there for 15 years, Sinead.
There you go.
I'm like, this is insane.
But it's kind of nice to think that there are these places in the city. You know, you think of the city, you think of hustle and bustle, but it's lovely to find out that there are these little projects going on, there are initiatives around the country, around the city centre that nobody had any idea about. Now, this has been highly publicised as well, but yeah. It was the first time for me to hear about it today when I spoke to Anthony.
Did you get a sense that beekeeping in an urban setting is something that a lot of people can do?
I think a lot of people can attempt to do it. You can start off small as well. Anthony was telling me about bug hotels or bee hotels that you could start off maybe along the lines of that first and then develop it. Also, it's a great setting for beekeeping, the city, because when you think about the variety of plants that are in the city, the different parks, the different gardens that are around. And there also seems to be a bit of a surge in it as well at the moment. It is quite trendy. And Anthony told me about how it has risen in popularity in the past.
It's really grown. It's grown. It's become a big thing in other countries as well, New York and places like that. It's really grown. And the strange thing about urban beekeeping is it's becoming more positive for bees than the countryside, because there's more variation of plants in the city than there is in the countryside. So the bees are doing a lot better now in cities sometimes than they are in the countryside.
What do you need if you want to be a beekeeper in the city?
Bees and space and private space, and just knowledge, knowing that you're not going to harm someone else or create a situation where people become afraid of honeybees, because that's the exact opposite of what you want to do.
I have a tiny balcony which I very proudly plant, and some come back and some don't. What's this bee hotel? How can you dip your toe in it?
Yeah, well, a niece of mine has a bug hotel. So what you can do is just put together a little hotel using pieces of wood, drill a few holes into it, and it becomes a safe space for insects or creatures to live. So you can adapt it so that bees will flock to it as well. So that could be maybe step one before you take on a hive, and that could be possibly step two or step three in the future.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Well, because I was terrified of bees, because when I was 3 years of age, walking down to show the kids on the road my Smarty birthday cake that the woman up the road had made for me, I got stung up the nose by a bee and I dropped the cake. So every time I see bee, I kind of panic. Mm-hmm. But I presume panicking is the worst thing you can do around a bee, right? So you need to presumably be calm and under control. Is that right?
That's correct. And I remember myself, isn't it funny? You always remember the stings that you got when you were younger. I remember I was driving, must have been in my late teens, and a bee came in the window and stung me on the neck. And I kind of panicked because it was just the pain of it. And I was driving at the same time as well. I didn't know what I was doing. But not to sound airy-fairy about it, but listening to Anthony talk and seeing him with the bees, there was a real connection there. There's a queen bee, of course, in the hive. There are also about 200 to 300 drones. They're the male bees, and then the rest are workers, females. There are three hives on the site, and there are about 60,000 bees in each hive. And he visits them regularly, and he is a pro handling the bees and the hives. But starting out beekeeping was a bit of a daunting task for Anthony, and I asked him how he felt when he started out.
Oh, I was terrified. I had no interest in it, but I felt that I owed Maureen, who helped me out a lot in life. She had the hives, and I really owed her, so I said I'd try it. And it took me about eight months. It was my second season. This is my fourth, so it was my second season. I was in here after I was at the turn into a garden, and I was just sitting with them, and it was just like this moment that I felt this connection to them and nature, and it was my first time in my life I ever felt that way, because beforehand it was just a place I'd visit, and insects and spiders and stuff were something to be terrified of. But after that moment, I was just like, I knew there was something more to it. I just felt calm, and they were letting me do what I wanted, and they were just calm around me, and I just felt an instant connection. And ever since then, I've been totally in love, and that love grows more and more all the time. To other insects now, I even enjoy looking at other insects. Sometimes I just sit in here watching the insects. Like, there's a spider sits in that cosmos flower there. It's a little white spider. And like any time a bee lands, it attacks it and eats it. But it's like watching David Attenborough sometimes sitting here. It's absolutely incredible. You don't need to watch the wildlife on telly. You have it in your garden. Like, it's like, it's carnage in here when you actually see what's going on and you pay attention to what's going on in the flowers. Like, it's proper wildlife, you know.
He has a real insight and calmness about him, but also he could be Ireland's David Attenborough, couldn't he?
He certainly could, yeah. And he has a calmness, and I think that that's what's needed as well.
Really?
You need to be calm. You also need a bit of courage as well to be going to the bees on a daily basis. A bit of compassion as well, because you're invading their home. You're invading their space by, you know, opening up the hives on a daily basis. And you also, Brendan, need the gear.
Yes. Were you suited and booted?
I was, and Anthony had all the tools of the trade to make sure that we didn't get stung.
So I'm lighting the smoker. The smoker is how we stop the bees from being aggressive when we're in the hive. It blocks their attack pheromone, and it makes them think there's a fire outside, and they hoard on all the pollen and honey inside the hive, and it makes them too fat to sting you then, and it makes it very easy for us to look around the hive because they get aggressive, you know.
And we're well protected. I feel like character from South Park with the outfit that I'm wearing.
Yeah.
Talk me through it.
So the bee suit is just basically just a protective uniform you wear to go into the hives, because they can sting. They can sting, but when they sting, they die. So when you're wearing the suit, they don't get stuck like they would in your skin, and less of them die. But it's more just for your own protection, especially your face. You don't want to get stung in the face, you know.
You really don't want to get stung in the face.
You really don't want to get stung in the face. No, that's going to leave a nasty mark.
Just on the stinging thing, about 5 years ago, so that was, I was terrified of bees and wasps, obviously. And then about 5 years ago, sitting at a restaurant outside in a restaurant in somewhere in London, a bee stung me on the leg and actually didn't hurt that much. Mm. So my fear was kind of countered a little bit. So I'm not as afraid of them as many. So you said there was three hives. Describe what it looks like.
So it's this beautiful open space, green space in the middle of the city. You go into the garden. There are lovely sculptures peppered around the garden.
Oh, wow.
Flowers growing. There's one beautiful sunflower in the centre of the garden. There's a little shed, and then there are three hives. And as I was saying, over 60,000 bees in each of those hives. And Anthony showed me around, and he also talked to me about how personal the hives are to him.
There's three hives here. These are my babies. These are the ones where I learn everything off. There's all technology installed on these from the Tyndall Institute that tells us the moisture, the weight, and they're designing it specifically for us. So it's important, and I still haven't really learned how to use the stuff yet, but it's really helpful, especially the weight so far. That's the main one I use, because if the weight shifts too quickly, I know something's about to happen and I have to get straight to my hive, you know. But these are my babies. These are my educational hives. I learn everything off them myself, you know.
How many bees per hive?
60,000. In the peak of summer, but that comes down to about 5,000 in winter and then back up again in spring. By June every year, there should be 60, 70,000 in a hive.
That's a lot of bees.
A lot of bees.
That sounds scary now.
Yeah. And the sensors can tell you a certain amount.
Right.
But Anthony himself can tell you a lot as well from listening to them practice and being in their company for so long as well. He was telling me about some of the sounds, like when they're frustrated, there's a bzzz. It's almost like an aggressive sound. And he's become so used to that sound now that he knows when a bee is ready for a fight.
When it's not happy. That's really interesting, mm-hmm. isn't it? We heard there how personal it is to him, and he's clearly very passionate about the bees, isn't he?
He loves them. He is, and he was telling me just how well he knows his different hives and bees.
These are my lovely hives, so they're a little less aggressive. I have ones with attitudes, but these are alright, you know. They're happy to mix with people.
Do they have personalities?
Oh yeah. Do I have some hives that I can't get, like, you can't get near? You'll hear the sound increase as you come close to them. Some of them have terrible attitudes, but some of them are really lovely. They all have that. It's sort of the queen's personality is sort of the personality that goes through the colony. Then she's the mother of them all, but she's not in charge.
Do you have to give her any special treatment?
No, all the bees look after her. It's the rest of them, you sort of just make sure they have room and space for her to lay. Other than that, you don't really do that for the queen. The workers look after her.
That's remarkable, isn't it? Now, you've brought me in some honey.
Anthony gave me a jar of honey. Now, that's from Inchicore, and I tasted a little bit of it earlier, and it was delicious and nutritious, dare I say.
It's beautiful golden fresh honey. I'm just going to take a scoop out of my little finger now.
Yeah.
Inchicore, it's beautiful.
Mark out of 10?
10 out of 10, 12 out of 10. That, as honey goes, that Inchicore honey could be my new rap name. I love that. That is really good, isn't it?
It's very tasty, I have to say, yeah.
And so you met some of the bees up close and personal, didn't you?
I did, and it was a very busy hive that I got to peek into.
She lay about 2,000 eggs a day.
2,000 a day?
Yeah, she knocks them out. Yeah, she, and, but she's very little control in the hive. Everybody thinks the queen, like, is this, leader and has power over all the mental health of the bees and all, but she doesn't. The queen, it's a real democracy. They debate every decision they make.
They like the microphone.
Duty, yeah, they'll be all over your camera as well. They're very curious. So these are, this is called brood. These are all sealed worker cells. So the workers are the females, and the drones are the males. But the males are useless. They do nothing. They look like bumblebees, and they don't really look like the workers. They have no stinger. They can't really feed themselves. The workers do everything.
Is that a metaphor for life? the workers do everything. And they're female, and the drones are useless, to quote the man himself. I did remember in the dark recesses of nature in school that actually the workers are female. They mm-hmm. do all the work, and the drones just lay around, do nothing.
That's it, yeah. They mate and then they die.
That's, oh wow, okay. Yeah.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Bye-bye, you useless drone. Tell me, what did you learn? I mean, it's gripping, even though it's such a subtle little subject. Mm-hmm. It's gripping, isn't it? What did you learn?
Anthony is like an encyclopedia. I went for a coffee with him afterwards and he just told me so much more. He was telling me how bees, there's almost like a society when it comes to bees. They each have their role. You know, there will be the bee that cleans and maintains the hive. There is the bee that maybe takes care of the bees that have been deceased, that have died. They each have their role when you think about it. And he just, I suppose it opened my eyes to nature, and that you can see something like that in a city setting. You know, you don't have to go down the country, and that they're peppered and dotted all around Dublin City. So to watch out for these things and
yeah,
to keep your eyes open.
And Anthony Freeman O'Brien, my local beekeeper, I thought I'd never hear myself say that. He's on Instagram. We can find out more about his work on Instagram, obviously. It's just a fascinating subject that I'm so glad you covered, Sinead. I love it. And it's so near my door. So I'm going to go and find out more about beekeeping.
Off to Watlin Street with you.
Off to Watlin Street with Sinead Newlacon. As always, a pleasure, never a chore. Thank you so much for joining us. And give us a little bit more of that music to get us in the mood before we go into. Oh, so camp. I can make anything camp. Even a report on bees. Sinead, you're a legend. Thank you so much. That was wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Let's take some ads.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I really enjoyed that report about the bees. Now, something completely different. Niamh O'Driscoll, Niamh Driscoll joins me from our Cork studio, having come off Inclare to speak to us about island living and how she's became Ireland's first female skipper. Niamh, how are you?
Hiya, Brendan. Thanks for having me.
Now, Niamh Driscoll, am I saying it right?
Niamh Griscoll.
Niamh Griscoll. Okay, now I got it there. Sorry, I should have written that down for
Niamh. That's okay.
I'm very, very sorry. So you are a Clare Island native.
Clare, yeah, Cape Clare, Clare Island, yes. The southerly most inhabited island in Ireland.
The southerly most inhabited island in Ireland. And it's interesting because there's a very small winter population, is that right?
That's right. So during the winter, the full-time winter population will be approximately 120, 130 people.
Wow.
But then you'd have people commuting at weekends. People have to go to some people have to go to the mainland to work Monday to Friday and return at the weekends, like many people go from Cork to London and so on.
Wow, yeah. I did a tour of about 4 or 5 islands in and around there, and I've been to Clare Island. Absolutely stunning. You are very lucky to be from that part of the world.
Well, we're very biased, but we do agree.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. So, go back a little bit. You had a very dramatic entrance into the world, it says here. Tell us.
Well, I think it was more dramatic for my mum, my family than it was for me. Yeah, I don't have too many memories of it. But yeah, I'm a Christmas baby. And so mom had very rapid labours with my two older brothers. And I suppose her doctors weren't too happy that she wanted to spend Christmas on the island. So the compromise was that she'd come off the island back to the hospital on Stephen's Day. And unfortunately, Mother Nature has other plans and the weather was very, very inclement. So the late great skipper of the day, Cathal O'Driscoll, deemed it would be best to call for the lifeboat. And so the lifeboat came in and medevaced mom and my dad and my second brother off And I was born then the following day in St. Finbarr's.
Which is interesting because you could have been one of three people. There's only two people born on the island still living on the island. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. And my dad is one of them.
Okay.
So he was physically born on the island, and I often give Mom a hard time that she didn't give birth to me on the lifeboat. It would have made for a far more dramatic story. But nonetheless, it still was an exciting start into life. And I guess a lot of my friends would say it explains a lot.
Why? Why? Tell me why.
My love of boats and the sea. And I'm generally always, I always tend to run. When I don't have to walk, as it were, I'm always rushing around.
Okay, and who's the other person still living on the island who was born?
Our postman, Thomas Cadigan.
Very good. And I read here that you used to fill in for the postman in the summer holidays, is that right?
So I suppose everybody on Cape Clear is multitasking, so you don't just do one job, if you can do 10, you do the 10. And one of the jobs I have is if the postman, the foreign postman needed a day off, I'd fill in for him, or reading the ESB meters and your traditional bar work and whatnot.
You're as good. But obviously, when you weren't filling in for the odd jobs here and there, you were spent most of your time working on boats in the summer holidays, is that right?
That's correct, yeah. I grew up on boats. My dad was a part-time fisherman, and I suppose from a very young age, he had both myself and my brothers out at sea, and I suppose would have started teaching us from a very young age. And it really kind of instilled a deep respect for the sea, but also a love of the sea and all it brings with it. And I kind of progressed from there then. I was kind of getting tired of the bar work. You know, I love meeting new people, but it's unsociable hours and whatnot.
Yeah.
And again, the late, great Cathal O'Driscoll came to me in 2004 and asked me, would I be interested in going crewing on the ferry for the summer? And I grabbed that opportunity with both our hands because, you know, I love meeting people. I love being out in the sea, mm-hmm. And I love boats. So it married all three together for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was in a very fortunate position that he opened the door for me to enter into what would have traditionally have been a very male dominated and testosterone filled environment up to then.
To be a skipper.
But I started off as crew, so that would have been on the deck, and then progressed a number of years later. So I suppose I qualified in 2010.
So interestingly, I am very interested in sailing and the sea, and it's a Donnycumlately thing because I'm from the city, but all around us obviously is sea, and I've really looked to the sea, and so I'm fascinated by your story because I'm very drawn to the sea myself. And I know that there's a couple of courses people can do to assist. You don't have to own a boat, you can do the crew course and then you can assist. Have you heard about these?
Absolutely. I mean, BIM and even Sail Cork here by Eddie English, they run some fantastic courses. So I suppose coming from an island background and being aware of all the excitement and entertainment the sea can come, I'm also very aware of the hazards that come with it when she's not respected. So I would encourage anybody who is new to absolutely get involved in sea life. You certainly won't look back and regret it. But safety is first and foremost. So there's a wide range of courses, even from the basic water safety courses. They're very enjoyable and there's certainly no load to do. And at all times, please wear a life jacket.
Yes, well done. You're doing your job very, very well there. But a friend of mine got me into this idea a few years ago. So I have no background in sailing either. She went and did the week course to be crew. And then she's part of a number of WhatsApp groups through a number of sailing clubs. And so families or people who have boats will text people on the WhatsApp group. And she goes out and just assists on other people's boats. So it's a great way to meet people as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's very sociable. I wouldn't be involved in sailing myself, but I would have quite a few friends in it, and it's very, very sociable.
So you hold the wonderful title of being Ireland's first female skipper.
On the ferries, that's
on the ferries.
Well,
okay.
I was certainly the first female ferry skipper down west, and I've been told the first in Ireland.
Okay, I'm surprised at that. So you're now a skipper 13 years, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. And you're the first, so only 13 years ago, a female skipper. So it was very male dominated, was it?
It was, and I suppose, you know, it was just tradition. It wasn't anything specific that was impeding females to get into the industry. But I suppose it's kind of like that soccer player from, was it Brazil? I'm not too au fait with soccer. And, you know, she was interviewed there recently that when she was growing up, she didn't have, you know, she couldn't turn on the telly and watch female soccer players.
Yeah.
It was all men, and that took time. And it was kind of like that. And I suppose I was very fortunate that I had the right people around me who I suppose, had faith in my capability and also encouraged me and supported and helped me from, you know, my father, my brothers, Cahoor, a great friend of mine who gave me the start, my uncles, my neighbours, my three cousins.
Brilliant.
You know, the right people were there. Obviously, it wasn't plain sailing. You are going into a male-dominated environment and change doesn't come easy and it took perseverance and...
Yeah.
A bit of stubbornness, I hate.
And fair play to you. And it's all about if you can see it, you can be it, that whole thing. Yeah, so you're going to inspire a whole generation.
Well, you know what happened last summer, I suppose, how it came to light, I suppose, 13 years later, was I was involved in a documentary with RT1, Malin Lamara. And I have two nieces who were 5 and 9 last summer. And the eldest Quiva asked me, she said, you know, Nini, she calls me Nini, why is it that you were picked to take part in this? And I said, you know... Well, I think it's because I drive the ferry. And she goes, but what's so special about that? And the 5-year-old piped up, yeah, like we can drive boats as well. And I said, yeah, you're dead right. And I just said to myself, you know, if I've achieved nothing else than that, I just think, you know,
that's
it was a wonderful moment for me personally.
Oh, that is a gorgeous story and a lovely way to end our chat. But you don't live full time on the island at the moment, do you? Is that the plan to be full time back on the island?
Hopefully, yeah. So I'm very involved in the community. I'm the Cahir Lucker chairperson of the local cooperative in a voluntary capacity. And I'm a secondary school teacher. So Monday to Friday, I'm based on the mainland and then return Friday evening. And head off either Sunday evening or Monday morning, whichever is best for weather-wise.
Well, Niamh Ní Criscoll, Gurmíl Mahagut, thank you so much for taking our call and may you continue to inspire another generation of young women to be skippers. Thanks a million.
Gurmíl Mahagut.
Anish Tashe on Elm, the Prishgale, Tananukta, Le Cotta Wallish. Gurmíl Mahagut, Cot. And just to mention, our gaff goddess, Laura de Barra, is going to be coming up shortly. So if you have any questions about how to get the shine back in your taps or the stain off your loo, get them into us. Text 51551. Also, a lovely text in about beekeeping. It definitely is something I'm interested in, would you believe it or not? If anyone is interested in beekeeping, the best first action is to join their local beekeeping association and complete the beginner's course. Good advice. University of Galway also runs a beginner's beekeeping course. A local association can be found by Googling the Federation of Irish Beekeepers Association or the Irish Beekeepers Association. Another fantastic organisation is the Native Irish Honey Bee Society, and they are an all-Ireland, they're Ireland-wide society that looks after the protection and promotion of the Native Irish Honey Bee. Great tips. So you can Google that, Federation of Irish Beekeepers Association, and you'll be able to find out more. Now, it's time to play our quiz. So we have a gorgeous prize to give away. It's 2 nights B&B with 1 lovely dinner in their botanical restaurant at Ainua Collections Dublin One Hotel. Dublin One Hotel is a stylish, central and good value base located in the North Circular Road. Brilliant for exploring all Dublin city centre has to offer. You'll be close to all the main shopping districts, entertainment venues and so much more. And they want you to check out their summer offers at dublinonehotel.com. That's exciting. So, we have two quizzers going to join me on the line now. Olivia Cassidy and Ross Common, are you there?
Hi Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm great, how are you?
Good, good.
So, what are you up to today?
Well, not a lot. We're just in doing a little bit of shopping in Roscommon. So, yeah, trying to keep out of the rain.
Oh, is it raining where you are?
Yes, lashing.
And were you shopping for anything in particular? I'm just being nosy.
No,
I like to go through people's
just,
baskets.
No.
No.
No, not today.
No,
I'll leave that for today.
Anybody shopping with you? Or are you on your own?
Yeah, I have Isabel and Genevieve. They're out and about with me as well.
Okay, and are they listening right now?
They are.
Hi, Isabel and Genevieve. How they
hi,
do?
Hi.
Anything's planned for this bank holiday weekend?
No, not a thing. I was just saying that it's our wedding anniversary this weekend, but no, nothing planned yet. Not that I know of.
Oh, well, you might be doing the planning if you win this prize.
Honest to God, yeah.
There you go.
That'd be great.
How long are you married, mind me asking?
23 years.
Oh, congratulations. Congratulations. And you can hear now, I'm getting labelled, I'm basically the new Linda Martin. I'm getting labelled the dog lover in here now, so everybody's asking me about dogs.
Any pets? Oh, well, that's a good thing.
I love them. Do you have any pets?
Yeah.
What do you have?
We have a dog, yeah. One dog.
What's her name? Her?
Rocky, he's 2 and he's lovely. He's gorgeous. He's a mix. He's a Pyrenean and a Bernese mix. So he's a big woolly thing.
Oh, he's a big fella.
Yeah, he's a big fella. Yeah, he sure is.
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous. I'd love to see a picture of Rocky. I'm obsessed. Okay,
so he's lovely. He's lovely.
Well, best of luck, Olivia. You're going to be playing against Luke O'Reilly from Glanmire in Cork.
Round on, cut us hard too.
Tommy Gahanwa, August you.
I'm here in Limerick at the moment, Brendan.
Okay. But you're from Cork originally, is that right?
That's right, yeah. I'm working in Limerick for the last few months, so it's going very good. I'm joined with my colleagues here today. Robin Scott, give Brendan a big hello there, boys.
Hi, Brendan.
Hi, Robin Scott. How are you? Robin Scott sounds like a superhero before he changes into his cape. So what do you work at?
I'm working in a company called Green Rebel. We collect offshore data to best inform wind farm developers. So it's a very dynamic field at the moment.
Oh, it is. And I see here that you're a bit of a runner as well, are you?
How did you know that?
I don't know. I've ESP.
That's right, yeah. There's two big races for me coming up now, Brendan.
Go on.
The Dingle Marathon there at the start of September.
Oh, fair
play.
And
that'll get me warmed up then for the Dublin Marathon at the end of October.
Oh, okay. So you're the real deal. You really are a runner.
Oh, Jesus, that's right for you.
Okay, are you hopeful that you're going to do well in this competition, in this quiz now? You know how it works.
There's a lot of intellects from Roscommon, so I'd say I'd be the underdog for this one anyway.
he's trying to flatter you, Olivia. Do you hear that?
Honest to God, I heard that. That's good.
That's not going to work here today, I'm afraid, Luke. Yeah. Let me just give you a little reminder of how it works. There's three questions each. I give you the category, then I ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and you get it right, you just get 1 point. But if you go without the clue and you get it right, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points, of course, at the end is the winner. If we draw, we go to a tiebreak question. Is that clear?
Yeah, perfect.
Are you ready to play?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. I love the music. It's so good. Okay, Olivia, category one is Irish festival headliners. So we're looking for you to name this band, okay, of Irish festival headliners. Do you want to go with a clue for 1 point or no clue for 2 points?
We'll try no clue.
Going to try no clue. So we want you to name this band for 2 points.
Yeah, we know, yeah, we understand. Who needs to be told? We sleep all day, we drink all night.
The Coronas.
That's they were singing their song San Diego Song by the Coronas, who they're playing at Independence this weekend in Mitchelstown in Cork.
Nice, very good.
Yeah. But they'll be near you, Luke, if you head home. Okay, that's 2 points for Olivia. Well done. Off to flying start.
Great.
Luke, same with the same category. Irish festival headliners. So again, we're looking for you to name this singer. So do you want to go with a clue for 1 point or 2 points with no clue?
I'm going to have to match fire with fire in this one, Brendan. Let's go for two.
I love the way that's fighting talk. I like that on a Thursday. Okay, can you tell me, name this singer? Can you name that singer, Luke?
I can. That's Iggy Pop.
Well done. Correct.
Boom
yourself. Okay.
You hear that one, Olivia?
Well done.
I'm coming to you.
Okay, let's keep it clean, lads. Let's keep this clean. Okay, category two, Olivia. Celebrity travel show hosts.
We're
looking for you to name the celebrity who hosted this travel show. Okay, so okay. You're not going with your no clue. So 2 points, no clue, correct?
Yes.
So we're looking for you to name the celebrity host.
Now, all hold on, because we're going round through a gate and up a hill. Oh, look, he's telling the man to get out of the way. Hold on, we make a run at it. Do you know what it is? I never knew they had Disney in India.
Can you name that celebrity?
Brendan. I can think of his first name, Brendan. The two brothers.
I'm afraid that's incorrect.
No, okay.
It was Francis Brennan.
granted. Brennan, yes, not Brendan.
No, that's me. Although we are easily confused.
I know.
Now, okay, so still on 2 points. Luke, celebrity travel show hosts, do you want to go with a clue for 1 point or 2 points with no clue?
Let's go for the kill. Let's go for the two.
Your voice is getting deeper, Luke. Luke, okay, can you tell me who is this celebrity travel show host?
So this is a depiction on the wall of all the different parts of the empire, the great Persian empire, bringing tribute to the king of the time. So this would be a Mede with his round hat. This would be a Persian with his tall hat, holding hands. This group comes from India, and you can see he's wearing a sari. This lot come from Samarkand. I'm going to Samarkand next.
Who is that celebrity travel show host?
Pass.
What? You said pass? You didn't know. Okay. It was the absolutely fabulous Joanna Lumley, who has hosted a number of travel shows, including Joanna Lumley's Great Cities of the World, Joanna Lumley's Silk Road Tour, and Joanna Lumley's Japan. Okay. That's good news for you, Olivia.
You're still in the game. Still there.
One more category. This category is Irish pop stars. How is good is your knowledge on Irish pop stars? Do you want a clue, or no clue? For no clue, you get 2 points.
Actually, we'll go for it. No clue.
God, lots of brave people this week, just out there living your best life, Olivia.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. No clue. Who is this Irish pop star?
We did the MEN Arena in Manchester, I think on 2 St. Patrick's Day in a row, actually. And, you know, to share that moment with live on stage in front of 16,000 people. And I remember the four of us came out with a pint of Guinness and tricolours around our head to celebrate the day that was. And the crowd really kind of bought into that.
Nicky Byrne.
Well done, Olivia. You have a grand total of 4 points. Congratulations. So, I don't have to spell it out for you, Luke. You need to get this right.
That's fair enough, yeah.
Yeah?
I'm up against the ropes there now, Brendan. Give it to me.
Every brilliant competitive cliche coming out of you there. I love it, Luke. Okay, it's Irish pop stars again. I presume you're going to go for no clue for 2 points?
Let's go for it.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Who is this Irish pop star?
It was a couple of different things and ended up bumping into him, you know, one night. And I was with my mom and they swapped numbers. And all of a sudden, then I was flying over to London and got my publishing deal, my record deal. It's mad even talking about it.
Who's that Irish pop star?
You're going to laugh. I'm going to say Samantha Mumba.
Oh, you got it. You got it in there. You're right. Right.
Are
on
you
the clock.
Serious?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's go.
Yes, you got it right. 4-all. So we're going to go to tiebreak. Now, before we came on air, we asked you a tiebreak question each. Remember?
Yeah.
And do you remember what you answered?
Yes.
Yes, okay. The question was, according to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from Tremore, County Waterford, to Oranmore, County Galway? We asked you to answer in hours and minutes. It is... Okay, so, Olivia, do you remember what you said?
Something crazy, 6 hours, 20 minutes.
That's correct. Luke, do you remember what you said?
I think I said 14 hours on the button. That's taking it handy, though. Against the wind.
You're a gas man. That's right, you said 14 hours, Luke, and Olivia, you said 6 hours, 20 minutes. It is, in fact, 222 kilometres. And if you fancy doing it later on, it's via the R680.
Might do that.
So, you said 6 hours, 20 minutes, and Luke, you said 14 hours. The correct answer is 11 hours and 22 minutes. Luke, you're our winner!
Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Olivia.
Olivia, we'll send you a Ray Darcy Keep Cup, and thank you so much to Isabella and Genevieve for supporting you. You did really well. It was very close.
Thanks a million. Yeah. All right, Brendan, thanks so much.
God bless.
Right.
Take care. Enjoy the rest of your week. Bye-bye. Luke, who are you going to take with you to the Dublin One Hotel? 2 nights B&B and a dinner.
I'm going to say my missus, but the lads are looking at me here and they're saying, you know, how many men can you squeeze into a room, you know?
What you do with that room is your own business, Luke. Right. Listen, congratulations, well done. That was a great game and you were great fun. I really appreciate your time. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Let's get some ads.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
That's a great song, isn't it? Were you bopping around to that? That's Jonah Lewis, or Jonah Louis. Jonah Louis, I've just gotten that corrected in my ear. It says Lewis, so I'm going to say Jonah Lewis. Sometimes you find things, sometimes you Lewis them. It says, you'll always find me in the kitchen at parties was by him, but he also wrote that Christmas song, Stop the Cavalier, Cavalry, oh, whatever, Niv. Yes, that was a great song. I'm often dancing around that kitchen myself. Now, author of Gaff Goddess and Decor Galore, Laura DeBarra, joins me now to chat through tough stains and how to tackle them. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
How are you? I actually love this section on this show because Ooh. I am a bit of a Gaff Goddess myself.
We all are, I think, deep down.
Deep down, we're competitive. I think I listen to you competitively. I'm like, God, how does she know that? Now, yellow is often a colour associated with summer, the sun, flowers and happiness. And not that we've seen too much of it. But anyway, today it's about the yellow we don't want to see in our homes. And honest to God, I was thinking about you last night. No, yellow pillowcases. I was like looking at the pillowcases in the drawer going, how are they yellow? So why are my yellow cases pillow? Why are my pillowcases?
It's completely normal and it's not a sign of anything like bad or sinister. It's just because, I promise, there's other things. This is more like, we basically have two types of sweat glands in our body, apocrine and eccrine, and the ones that are in our armpits, our heads, anywhere else that kind of grows hair, that usually is going to produce a different type of sweat. So it's more lipid rich. So it's got more protein in it, more ammonia. So it's going to be more yellow in tone. So when our heads are sweating at night during the summer, coming out through the hair follicle, it's usually creating a yellow sweat, and then that's seeping into the pillows and into the pillowcases. And it can often make people want to throw out their pillows or pillowcases, yeah. But you don't need to. You can, with your pillows, you can get them dry cleaned, or you can check how there's usually a tag that will tell you how to clean them.
Oh.
And then if you put a cup of white vinegar, Queen V, she is basically acidic enough and she'll neutralize the protein stains. That's what it is. It's a protein stain. It's coming from the body and it will be able to loosen it from the fibers and freshen it up. And vinegar is great for brightening whites anyway, like if you've like yellowing t-shirts and stuff like that.
Yeah. So just go back a step, because I'm trying not to dry read here the lipid protein rich sweat that's coming out of my head. So you can wash pillows, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, you've got to check what kind of pillows you have. Yeah. And if you're like, you'll be able to say like, oh, this is feather, or this is like, it's a different type of synthetic filler. And there'll be someone on YouTube washing it and showing you how to wash it and how to dry them. Or you can just bring them to a dry cleaner or like a laundrette. They'll usually do them. Because pillows, sometimes they say you should change your pillow every 6 months, but it's so wasteful. And sometimes it takes 6 months to get to really into the pillow and get it perfectly comfortable. So you're better off buying, like investing in, and they're really inexpensive, pillowcase covers. Oh. They're ones that go on, they're honest to God. Get two so that you can pop one in the wash when you're washing your pillowcases. You don't have to wash them every time you change your like duvet sets and stuff. But they are incredible, because when you sleep as well as the sweat, a lot of your like it's skin cells.
What are you going to tell us now?
Oh my God, it's actually, if you, before you,
I hate myself right now.
Before you put on your sheets the next time, pat your pillow and pat the mattress, and what you see coming off isn't dust, it's you. So you want a nice little protector over that, and it will just keep things fresh.
Oh God, and I'm really, in my head, I'm quite anal about my bed cleanliness.
We'll get a cover, you'll be fine. They're like little zip covers that pop on and they'll keep everything protected.
I'm going to need a bit of counselling after this session today, I'm telling you. So buy covers. Okay, I'm in, I'm writing this down now. And check and see if you can wash your pillow. And did you mention how it'll be down to the pillow how often you wash it, basically, is that right?
I think like you don't need to go crazy with it. If you have covers on it, you don't need to wash them that often at all, because the covers are really dense fabric. Okay. They're not woven, they're going to be a different type of weaver, like they're not going to let the stuff through. And then you can basically, if you want to start afresh and wash your pillows, sometimes they say you should do it like every quarter, like biannually is fine.
You're so clever, because I really do feel, in terms of, you know, bedroom hygiene, the pillow is probably quite overlooked, isn't it?
She gets some doing and people don't even realise, because like your head has so many things going on. There's so many places for things to come from. You're drooling, you're sweating, skin, body lotion, moisturisers.
I don't even know if I should go here with you, but hotel pillows.
I know, right? But you've got to remember what hotel pillows do well is they'll usually have non-synthetic fabrics, basically. So it'll usually be cotton, which responds really well to enzymes in washing powders. It doesn't hold on to bacteria. It doesn't hold on to skin cells. They're laundered quite often. Like, I would don't mind having the same like sheets, obviously, when you're the person staying there for a few nights. But like, it's fresh sheets once you come in. The ones that I would not be kind of hanging around with the dress pillows that go
I now kick them away with a stick. I pull them off. I bring my hotel stick in from the car and just take them off. You know, the throws and things that you know they've been there forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Silk pillowcases, which I can't think of anything more uncomfortable, because they make your head hotter, don't they, silk pillowcases?
Well, we're going to read these for filth now for a second, because originally silk pillowcases... Here we go. We're gonna do it. So... In theory, silk pillowcases are amazing because they're actually more cooling. They're a natural fibre. They keep you much cooler than a cotton. They feel great against the skin. They can actually help you achieve a more youthful appearance. They don't increase wrinkles. They're better for hair. They're better for static in hair. They're better for curly hair. However, what people are buying and being duped into buying are satin pillows. And satin and silk, this is when my Cork accent comes out now, satin is not the same as silk. Satin is a weave, silk is a fibre. So silk is made from silkworms. It's really natural, breathable fibre. Satin is just a type of weave that exposes more of the one thread in one direction.
Right.
So you can actually have these companies getting you to spend 50 quid on a satin pillowcase or a satin eye mask, and it's actually polyester, which is just plastic. So... instead of all the things, natural attributes that a silk pillow would have, the satin pillowcase is actually doing all of the opposite. It's making you sweat, overheat. It's not good for your hair. It's not good for your skin. Your face is up against something that's made from a byproduct of chemicals, etc. So,
and just a quick read of the label will tell you whether or not it's satin or silk.
Yeah, even online, if you're buying it online and not sure, they have to kind of usually state it. And if you want the silk but you don't want the price tag, look for ones that are half silk. So half the pillowcase, like one side is silk. That can be really useful as well, because you get all the benefits of silk but half the price.
So let's go to the foundation, the sheets. Now, so I have a mattress cover.
Beautiful.
You recommend them, yeah?
Beautiful, yep.
I'm getting on my top of the class now.
You literally are, yeah.
So I have a rotating mattress cover as well.
Honestly, stunning.
I change my sheets. Now, this is going to shock everybody, and it's probably not the best for the environment. I change my sheets, my bottom sheet, not obviously the full set, not the duvet cover. And obviously I have manky pillows, so I'm going to have to rethink my whole process. I change my sheet every night.
Every night?
Every night, yes. I change my every night. I'm a delicate sleeper. I have a sleep routine and a shower, a bit of moisturizer, and a cup of herbal tea. And
lovely.
I sound like a 92-year-old woman now, don't I?
No, it sounds stunning. It sounds very Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, clean, crisp sheet. And then I know it's a bit, maybe at the weekend I won't bother now, because even this morning I was like thinking of you again, going, I'm going to just come out live on national radio and say I change my sheet every day. Is that mad?
To be honest, it sounds like something that's very peaceful, very mindful. You enjoy it.
Laura DeBarra says it's okay.
There you go. It's contributing positively to your life.
Thank you.
You're probably not washing the sheet by itself. Anyway, it's probably going into a load that's already being washed.
It is, honestly.
And it sounds to me like you're taking care of things and you want things in your house for longer. It'd be different if you were like dumping the sheet every time. So it's like, even though people are kind of like anti-washing often, it depends on how you're doing it, you know, and it depends what it's achieving. Because people can say that you can't do this, that and the other, but if it's making you really happy and you're not harming anyone,
it does. Can you hear the happiness in my little voice?
Yeah, and it sounds lovely.
It is lovely. And I used to get my mum to tuck me in when I was a kid. I like to be like a tapeworm, tucking tighter, tighter. But
I love that.
So, but how often should people change their sheets, normal people?
Well, I think some people it's just not practical for them to change their sheets every week. Like, it can be that it can be difficult for them. It can be that it's difficult for washing. You can be in a flat where you can't wash your sheets all the time. So like, I do think sometimes people come on and they're like, usually interior people are giving advice about their really rich houses and they're like, change your sheets every week. But it's not fair. Like, as in, like, you should change them. When
how do they say
like
it? Change your sheets every week.
You should change your sheets every week. And then it's like, she's not even changing her sheets herself. So like, don't even listen to her. So yeah. I think like, I like to do mine in the summer weekly. You don't have to do the full set. You can just do the bottom sheet and the top pillows. It's usually every second week. This is if you want to keep like hygiene like tip top and low in bacteria. But it, you know, I wouldn't be changing them as often as you feel they're dirty. The main thing with bedding, people buy a really expensive designer fans for their room because they're like, I'm roasting at night, and they don't pay any attention to the fibers that are against their skin. If you're not using a cotton, cotton basically keeps you cooler. It wicks moisture away from your skin. It helps you cool down. It does something with the sweat. It releases it because it's really porous fibers. Something like a polyester or polycotton, it's going to hold the sweat in between the cotton, in the fabric and you, and it makes you overheat. So you could have about 50 fans around you, and if you're inside basically cling film bedding, yes, you're going to be hotter. Listen, so you've got to be careful.
There's so much more. I could talk to you all day. We should go out for dinner and just talk about
it. We actually should. Yeah.
So we'll get to mattresses again, but thank you so much, Laura De Barra, for your time
today.
It was great chatting to you. Thanks to the team who put the show together today. Aisling well, I can't say it today now. Aisling Grufferty was on sound. Cormac O'Hara is up next with Drive Time. I'll be back for one more show tomorrow at 3 p.m. Chat to you then.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.